The Low Post is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by.
And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, lunchtime on Monday here in the Eastern time zone, where a couple of weeks ago, we had a Heat-a-Palooza episode with Dan Lebatard, Duncan Robinson, and Ramona Shelburne. And look, the finals matchup is set. I primed it last Friday. The Heat against their old superstar, the one who spurned them for a homeward journey. It's going to be very exciting. We will break down everything about the X's and O's, the drama, et cetera, with Jeff Van Gundy tomorrow on the Low Post. But if the Heat got a day, the Lakers deserve a day. Because really, the Lakers don't get a lot of coverage in the media. They deserve a day. And I think they deserve a day because if you just zoom out and look at everything that has happened to this franchise since the Chris Paul trade veto in 2011, which is just one of the great what-ifs in NBA history. And David Stern would push back even calling it a veto. He just said, I didn't like the trade. Like any owner, I rejected the trade I didn't like. Whatever the case may be, I just want to retrace the last 9 years of Lakerdom, including 6 years in the wilderness of lottery life, a place the Lakers never are in and don't have any familiarity with. And I couldn't think of anyone better to do that than, I'm just going to say it, Los Angeles icon, Southern California icon, former Stanford softball star, Ramona Shelburne. How are you?
Wow, that is way too kind of an introduction. I'm doing good. It's funny you mentioned the Chris Paul trade because I was thinking about that the other night. John Black, the former PR guy for the Lakers, told me at that time it will take the Lakers a decade to recover from this, from not just the Chris Paul trade that fell apart, but the way it spurned Lamar Odom and changed his career, the way it changed their relationship with Pau Gasol, who's never really wanted again by the franchise and never really the same player. It will take the Lakers a decade to recover. That's almost a decade, right? He was right.
So if for people who forget, the Lakers for like 4 hours seemed to have acquired Chris Paul in a three-team trade with the Pelicans, the Hornets, whatever the hell they were. They were still the Hornets, I think, and the Rockets, where Pau Gasol would have gone to the Rockets. Mm-hmm. Goran Dragic, Kevin Martin, Luis Scola, and a first-round pick would have gone to the Hornets. Chris Paul would have come to the Lakers. And I remember I wrote my trade evaluation column and went to what I believe was like a farewell from New York City party for one of my good friends. And I got to the party and had beer one, sip one, and looked at my phone. And I was like, I think I gotta leave. They're gonna veto the trade. I gotta go have fun in California, buddy. I'm never gonna see you again. Bye bye. So what do you remember? You're in the trenches in LA. What do you remember? Because think about that. What if you get 26-year-old Chris Paul, you have Kobe, you have Bynum, who is a budding all-star at that point. And the next year, you still have all the stuff that you had to trade for Dwight Howard, which people forget when the Lakers got Dwight Howard, it was like, that's it. Cancel the league. It's over. They're going to be too good. They have the best center in the league in his prime. They still would have had that entire trade arsenal to get Chris Paul, Kobe Bryant, and Dwight Howard. And then it all falls apart. What do you remember about that day?
Well, I mean, I had the same thing as you. I was halfway through a column, you know, talking about the Lakers are back, right? Like they're still the Lakers. The Lakers, there was always this mythology about the Lakers. This is sort of, I used to call it Lakers exceptionalism, is that, you know, they will always find a way. The Lakers just, they're just somehow things like this just happen to the Lakers. And they have this sort of belief that things like this just happen. Right, you're going to be able to trade for the best point guard in the game, and then you're going to be able to trade for the best center in the game, and then, well, if you don't want to trade for him, they'll sign with you as a free agent. Like these things just fall into their laps all the time, and you know, okay, the last finals appearance that the Lakers had was in 2010. At that point, there had been 64 NBA finals, and the Lakers had appeared in 31 of them. That's like half. It's like, not like that. I mean, every other year they are in the finals. That is an unbelievable record, an unbelievable set of circumstances where your franchise, if you are a Laker fan, you just have an expectation that your team is going to be in the finals every other year. How crazy
that's
is that?
That's how you get sign guy with the gold chain going, Lakers, Lakers.
I'm Facebook friends with that guy.
I love that guy.
But what do I remember about the trade? I remember the night of, it was shocking, right? We are all kind of unpacking what happened. But I remember later, these conversations with Jeannie Buss about it. And she was and it really spoke to me about how bad the relationship with her and her brother was, and how dysfunctional that relationship, how that dysfunctional relationship hurt Lakers' business, hurt what was going on. Because in Jeannie's retelling of this story, she was at the Board of Governors meeting in New York, and her dad, Dr. Buss, had started taking her to Board of Governors meetings, I don't know, 5-10 years earlier. So she had been a regular there, and the league is restarting after the lockout, right? So all of the owners are there, and I think it created the perfect circumstances for the Chris Paul trade to fall apart, because the owners are in a hotel in New York, and they're all talking, you know, and I've heard a lot of different stories of, you know, people trying to talk, you know, the principals involved, and because they're all in a room. Normally when you would have trade negotiations like this, they wouldn't be all in the same room. You know, you'd have to be on the phone. You'd have to be on. Well, the Laker delegation who were having the trade conversations were not there. Jim Buss, Mitch Kupchak, Jerry Buss were not there. They were not in that room. But Andy Roser was in that room from the Clippers. And David Stern was in that room, and anybody else who wanted to be a part of those conversations in that room. I think the Celtics were trying to be a part of that conversation as well. Dan Gilbert was obviously there when word started to spread that the Lakers had a deal. A lot of those owners were still right there. And this is the part that gets me, okay? So they had a trade call. Like the Rockets, the Lakers, and the Pelicans, they had a trade call. You know, everybody goes around and they say, you know, you guys, do you agree to this deal? Yes, Houston, you say yes. New Orleans, you say yes, right? But Jeannie wasn't part of that call. And if she would have been part of that call, she would have told Jim and Mitch and her dad, hey, wait till all the owners get back on their planes and out of New York. Okay? Don't do this right now. Like, don't let this trade leak in any capacity for another 2 hours. Like, if two more hours pass and all those owners are not either driving to the airport or in the air already, okay? I don't know that they are even able to reach David Stern and complain about this trade. Now, if you ask David Stern, he would have vetoed the trade anyway. He was distracted by the lockout negotiations, the end of that, et cetera. And he says he didn't like the trade no matter what. The real question is, should Dell Demps have been authorized to give the yes from New Orleans? There was a man named Jack Sperling, who was the designated league president of New Orleans at the time. And, you know, he was acting as the sort of ownership voice. So Dell was talking to Sperling.
Sounds like a CIA agent. Go see Sperling in his office. Sperling, yeah. Jack Sperling here. What do you got for me? Jack Sperling.
It was Jack with like a C and there's no K. I always remember spelling. I think it was a strange spelling. But the fact that the Laker front office who was making that trade was not communicating with the Laker who was representing the team at the Board of Governors meeting to pass along the critical information of, hey, if this trade goes through right now, everyone is going to hate us. We literally just, all the small market teams hate the large market teams like the Lakers for this very reason. We just got done with the LeBron Heedles decision that just, you know, cost the Cleveland Cavaliers the, you know, $500 million in value or whatever number you want to put on that. So much of what the owners were upset about in those lockout negotiations was about to just be slapped upside the head by this trade. And all they had to do was wait. All they had to do was talk to Jeannie. And all they had to do was be on the same page. And they didn't do it.
So the trade falls through. The Lakers rebound by acquiring Steve Nash for 2 first-round picks. Steve Nash plays a total of 67 games for the Lakers in 2 seasons before retiring. They then acquired Dwight Howard for Andrew Bynum and basically nothing. Like, nothing draft assets.
Remember, they have Nash and Howard at the same time.
Oh, but they had Nash, Kobe, Gasol, Howard. I remember watching a preseason game, their first one. Yeah. And I think their first offensive possession was Nash, Powell, pick and roll, Powell lob to Dwight. And there was this thread of tweets being like, it's over. Shut down the league. It's done. The Lakers are going to win 1,000 games. It's over. And of course, they ended up winning 45 games that year and losing in the first round to the Spurs. Steve Nash missed the last 2 games of that series. That was actually a sneaky, decent team that was peaking toward the end there. And then Dwight leaves for reasons that are not interesting to me anymore.
Agreed.
Now he's back. It's a great reconciliation and rehabilitation story. And then the wilderness wandering begins. Oh. Kobe's health declines. Two devastating injuries. They give him an extension that is a disaster, but I think made sense in other ways as a signal to other star players that this is what we do. And they're just bad. For 6 straight years, they missed the playoffs. They have the number 2 pick 3 years in a row. We can debate whether they got enough value out of those picks or not. Mm-hmm. They have the most disastrous free agency period in the history of big market free agency, lavishing Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng with $1 bazillion in the summer of 2016. They make some smart moves along the way, by the way, mostly around the margins. They acquire the rights to Josh Hart and Kyle Kuzma in trades. Mm-hmm. They get Brook Lopez and Kuzma by offloading Mozgov and D'Angelo Russell. They found Caruso, who's been outstanding for them in the playoffs, including in the clincher against the Nuggets. They buy the rights to Jordan Clarkson from the Wizards. They get a first-round pick for Jeremy Lin, on and on and on. But big picture, they're just whiffing. And, like, dudes aren't even meeting with them. Like, Kevin Durant was like, yeah, you can't come to my house in the Hamptons. Like, I'm inviting 5 teams.
I know.
You're not one of them. That moment right there.
Yes.
The Lakers do not suffer indignities like that.
And Zach, I went on the jump and I said, the fact that Kevin Durant didn't take a meeting with the Lakers is so insulting, because you cannot take a meeting with maybe, 29 other teams? But if you don't take a meeting with the Lakers just out of, like, respect for their franchise history, and I remember afterwards, like, social media, like, crushed me. They were like, you're such a Lakers homer for saying that. And I was like, no, you don't understand. These are the Lakers. You can't not meet with the Lakers. How do you, I mean, this is the, and that spoke to me just how, one, it underscored how much disdain the rest of the league had for the Lakers, because you feel it when they're winning. Everybody hates the Lakers, right? Because it's the Lakers. They go to the finals every year, and
Lakers.
And there's this sort of Lakers. You know, if the nice way of putting it is the Lakers exceptionalism. The not nice way of putting it is Lakers entitlement, right? Their fans have this entitlement, like, we should be in the finals every year. Like, I mean, I always make fun of it. Like, if there's a superstar free agent out there, it takes about 4 seconds for Laker fans to create the put a Laker jersey on him, you know, Photoshop it on him, and then put, like, why can't they all be Lakers, right? Which free agent targets do you want? All of them, right? Like, there's this sort of entitlement about it. But when they don't even get a meeting with Kevin Durant, I agree with you, Zach. That, to me, that was the lowest thing I have seen in this franchise's history, covering the team in the, you know, 15, 20 years I've covered and observed the team.
You know who was better than Lakers guy? Lakers guy, you know who's better than? Remember the sunglasses bros? Like, there was those two guys wearing sunglasses, and they, like, one of them, like, whipped them off in perfect synchronization with the other. That was, anyway. So, Lakers, so everyone does love to hate the Lakers. There is no jealousy within the NBA like Lakers jealousy. And it is cresting again right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because Lakers exceptionalism, blah, blah, blah. They basically do the big stuff mostly wrong. Actually, I'm not sure that's fair. They do a lot of the big stuff wrong after the Nash Howard team falls apart. I think Ingram at number two, that's a fine pick. Russell at number two, I mean, you look at Porzingis and you think, what if? But he's always hurt. It's fine. Like, those are fine. Ball at number two is I think, a disappointment considering all the players that came after him. But, you know, they those are big things. They did okay with the number two picks. Free agency was a disaster. What saves them? What gets them to this point? LeBron comes. And LeBron comes by himself, which if you go and read the reporting at the time, that was not something that people thought would happen. LeBron comes by himself, and he gives the young guys a year. You know, there was all this murmurings from LeBron's camp that he doesn't need a second star right away. He's going to give the Lakers time. But I think he was going to give the Lakers time because he knew one way or another a second star was going to come. So here's the other thing that I want to take you back to, because you wrote this story. About a week before LeBron signs with the Lakers, he has an opt-in deadline with the Cleveland Cavaliers, June 29th. The opt-in or opt-out. He's got to make his decision on his player option. June 29th, like 48 hours before free agency. Kawhi Leonard is on the trade block at that point.
Yep.
You and Wendy and Woj write this story about how the Lakers, at the last minute, are trying to re-engage the Spurs on Kawhi Leonard talks because they think it would really help their case with LeBron if they can get Kawhi in the door first. Because they fear, and the Spurs tried to hold this over their head, they fear the scenario where LeBron opts in Cleveland, which I don't think was ever actually going to happen. But I think the Spurs tried to hold that over the Lakers' head and said, hey, if he opts in, then you got to do a sign and trade. It's a whole different, you know, it just becomes more complicated to get him. What do you remember about that story? Because you were one of the co-authors on it, about the pressure they were feeling at that moment. Like, because if that story is accurate, and you guys all reported it, so it is, they didn't necessarily think LeBron was coming by himself in terms of a star player.
Okay, so the one thing you have to remember is at that moment, the Lakers were incredibly sensitive about tampering. Okay, Magic Johnson.
Yeah, they've always been pretty cautious about it. They've always taken it very seriously.
Yeah, no, but they were so sensitive because they had just gotten slapped, right? I mean, Magic had done the appearance on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Wink, wink. If I saw, you know, like if I bumped into LeBron walking down the street, what would you say? And Magic like actually answered the question, right? And I'm trying to remember. I think this is after Rob Pelinka took the $500,000 fine, right? Isn't this afterwards?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm just getting the timeline right. So normally, Zach, in that situation, you would say, why are the Lakers even worried about this? They should be able to have a back channel to LeBron. They should have enough of a communication, with his camp or whatever.
Worried about Kawhi. They should know LeBron's intentions.
Yeah, they should know LeBron's intentions. Like, this reminds me, you know, we don't know this yet, obviously, because history doesn't happen this way that we in this moment. But, you know, when the Clippers are trying to sign Kawhi, you know, he's a free agent and he makes it known to them that he thinks they need another star. And he's very open to the Paul George possibility. Now, they have all that information at that time. But that was after July 1st, okay?
Yes.
Kawhi doesn't sign until July 5th. When the Lakers are having to make this decision about trading for Kawhi Leonard, it's pre-free agency opening. So any contact they have with LeBron or anything, you know, whatever you want to call it, back channels, information, notes being passed, you know, I don't know if you've sent a pigeon up or whatever at this point, they are so sensitive to tampering that they really can't, you know, ask for the carrier pigeon. They can't really do that. They were so, I just remember how nervous they were about that. And that's why I think the Spurs really exploited that situation to try to put a tremendous amount of pressure on the Lakers to say, hey, you have to, you got to give us everything for Kawhi because you're not just trading for, I remember this very distinctly. You're not just trading for Kawhi, you're trading for Kawhi and LeBron. And it was the same kind of pitch that Sam Presti ended up making 2 years later to the Clippers, saying, You're not just trading for Paul George. You're trading for Paul George and Kawhi.
And the Lakers called their bluff. Yep. And they were right.
And they were right.
Maybe they did have some back channel information. Certainly, like, it was no secret within our circles that all of the buzz all year long was that LeBron was going to the Lakers.
Uh-huh.
All year long. Wendy has talked about that and, you know, how close you were to reporting it and this and that. Like, that was all the buzz. But you just never know. The buzz, you never know. I mean, yep. Paul George was going to go to the Lakers, basically said, I'm going to go to the Lakers, so you should trade me, and then didn't go to the Lakers. Which was, you know, he was the star that was supposed to come. That was the setup. Yep. It was supposed to be LeBron and Paul George. Paul George didn't meet with them. So LeBron comes by himself. And there was a lot of chatter at the time from the jealous other 29 teams being like, this is the Lakers. The Lakers, yep. I remember a lot of people saying they don't deserve LeBron. And yep. I don't remember which character it is in The Wire that says deserve ain't got nothing to do with it. Well, deserve doesn't have anything to do with it because they deserve LeBron. They don't deserve LeBron. They're the Lakers. They got LeBron. I don't know that LeBron is going to any other team in any other city without a co-star at that point in his career, except for the Lakers. Now, I think LeBron was pretty confident that because they're the Lakers and because I'm me, we are going to get another star here one way or another. And I'll bet you, I have never talked to anyone in LeBron's circle about this, and I probably won't because it's too fraught. I'll bet you in the back of their head, they were already thinking, New Orleans is not a good situation for Anthony Davis. And Rich Paul later comes to represent Anthony Davis.
I'm trying to think back on when Anthony Davis switched his representation to Rich Paul.
It was definitely after LeBron signed with the Lakers. Yeah, I think it was well after.
But as you know, a lot of times those things are in the works.
But to be clear, I'm not suggesting anything nefarious at all. I'm just saying it would be a natural conversation for people to have spitballing about the NBA, just like we do, going around the league and saying, okay, Paul didn't come, Kawhi didn't come. You know, let's look around. Who's gettable maybe someday? Remember, that was an obvious one.
Kawhi was going to be a free agent too. Like, you know, we don't know that, at the time when the Lakers went and got LeBron and basically didn't do it with Kawhi, right? They called their bluff. They got LeBron anyway. Kawhi was still on the Spurs. They end up trading him to Toronto. I think it was a month later, maybe 6 weeks later.
It was July 20th, about something like that.
Yeah, so about a month later. So they still in their heads think they're going to get a real shot at Kawhi as a free agent a year later without having to give up all the kids, without having to trade for him. I think at that time, they really felt like Kawhi had given enough signals saying he wanted to be in Los Angeles eventually, like he wanted to come home. And in the Laker head, in their heads, they're like, okay, so if he wants to be in Los Angeles, it's just us or the Clippers. Well, we got LeBron. I mean, we got a better team if we got LeBron. So I think at that point when they called their bluff, they realized, one, they had a lot more leverage once they had LeBron. When they didn't have LeBron, the Spurs could make that pitch to say, you're not just trading for Kawhi, you're trading for Kawhi and LeBron. Well, they can't say that anymore. So they felt like this would be a better time. If they wait, he can just come as a free agent.
So they get LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get anyone else right away. They have a bad, by LeBron standards, first season where they miss the playoffs. LeBron suffers really the first serious injury of his career.
Yep.
And, you know, They stock the team with guys who can't shoot because LeBron wants playmakers around him. And to some degree, I think that vision has been half redeemed by this playoff run, to be frank, as much as people laughed at it, including me. And they make among their last-ditch efforts for shooting at the trade deadline, though, a course correction that telegraphs that they did not necessarily believe that their original vision was working. They trade Svi Mihailuk for Reggie Bullock. They trade Ivica Zubac for Mike Muscala, which is just an all-time disaster. Not an all-time disaster. It's an all-time fringe. Like, Ivica Zubac is not going to become a Hakeem Olajuwon or something, but he's a good player. Yeah. And this is after letting Brook Lopez walk, even though he would have been perfect for their team. Blah, blah, blah. Not a great first season. They then trade for Anthony Davis. So I'm going to go through two what-ifs for you. Ready? They're unanswerable, really, but I think the second one might be. What if, number one, Ramona Shelburne? What if LeBron never wins a championship in Cleveland?
Oh.
Does he leave? Can he leave the Cavs without a title there in good conscience?
That's a great question.
I don't. That's unanswerable. I don't know the answer.
It's unanswerable, but I think he could have because he took into all those so many finals. It wasn't like they didn't get there. They had a lot of cracks at it, and I think the situation would have been exactly the same in that the Cavs' window to win really closed when they traded Kyrie. They never really reloaded. Now, you and if you really want to go back into the what ifs, Cavs were on the one foot line of a trade for Paul George. Okay, that is one of the great what ifs in NBA history.
I believe that's the big deal. That's like a Denver's involved, or Kevin Love is maybe going to Denver. Like, or there are a couple complicated iterations of this.
Yeah, there were several iterations of that trade, but they were pretty close to trading for Paul George that year. And I don't know, LeBron and PG, and that maybe that keeps him there. Maybe Paul, instead of going to Oklahoma City, Paul goes to Cleveland. He and LeBron team up. That's a good what if. But I think LeBron leaves no matter what.
You make a great point when you talked about all the finals, four in a row that Cleveland went to with LeBron. There is a price for signing LeBron. LeBron is going to upend your franchise, right? Like, a coach is probably going to get fired at some point. You're going to end up trading all your young players and draft picks for help to win now. And there's just a certain amount of – it's been much less so with the Lakers than it was in prior stops. There's just a certain amount of melodrama. I don't know. There's just stuff. There's always stuff. There was social media stuff. There was passive-aggressive stuff. There was just drama. But you know what? He gets you to the finals. He doesn't just make you a contender. You don't lose in the conference finals. You don't have a random second round blip in this. He gets you. Yeah. Windhorse has written this a lot. There's a price, but in the end, he lifts everyone up. And what that really means is every single year you are going to be in the finals. I mean, barring an injury. It's not like... And so the price, whatever it is, ends up being you don't even think about it. It's obviously worth it because you are going to the finals and getting a chance to win four games for the championship every year. You're not losing earlier. You're not having, oh, we had a tough first round matchup this year. It didn't work out. You know, this and that. You're getting to the finals.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the Lakers do. They get to the finals. Okay. Like, I mean, that stat just blew my mind the other night when I thought about it. So this is their 32nd finals appearance. LeBron has appeared in 10 of them. So if you add it together, all right, it's 41 of the 74 NBA finals that have been held will include the Lakers and or LeBron. That's like 55%. It's ridiculous. I mean,
I don't want to get ahead of myself now.
Yeah.
But let's just two bigger picture things is. The Lakers win this finals. That's 17 titles. Now, the Boston fans gave me a lot of flack last week saying the Minneapolis one should not count. Okay, it's still still 17 to 11 or whatever it is. For some reason, I don't feel the same about those as I do about, like, there's a clear bifurcation between Thunder and Sonics.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just so old. I wasn't alive, et cetera. I don't feel that way about Minneapolis. Maybe it's just a stupid thing that they took the name. I don't know. I don't feel that same bifurcation. The second thing is, if LeBron wins this title, that's four for him. Mm. The MJ thing starts to get real close. But that's a different story. Can I give you what if number two?
Okay, go.
What if the Lakers do not move up in the lottery from number 11 to number four last year? What team is Anthony Davis playing for?
That is the one thing that when I look back on, when did they get the sort of, oh, can we get a little academic here, Zach? Can we use a term?
Obviously.
So there's a term in drama classes, and if you're a playwright, Deus ex machina, right? The intervention of God. Okay. There's this one thing that happens that you almost don't believe that is the only way you can explain it is divine intervention. That was the Deus ex machina. That was it, that they move up in the lottery, and you know, it would have been one thing if they moved up to number one. Okay, that would have been ridiculous. That would have been almost too much.
Like, oh, the conspiracy theorists would have been out in full force.
Yeah, I mean, and you know when you're like pitching ideas in the writer's room, somebody would have said, no, that's too much. That's one. I didn't need that. You know, that just was jumping the shark of all the crazy things that could have happened. Moving up to number four, though, was just good enough for the Pelicans to make that trade. It was that one asset that they didn't have going into it, where they finally said yes. And I personally, if I look back on it, I still think New Orleans trades Anthony Davis to the Lakers, even if they don't move up to number four. I still think they do. I think they like the Lakers' offer better than anybody than any other team. The only thing that would have changed it, and this, I'm sorry, Knicks fans, if I have to point this out, I think if the Knicks would have won the lottery, that they would have traded him for the number one pick. I do think Anthony Davis is a Knick if the Knicks win the lottery.
The Knicks cashed in all their lottery equity with the lottery gods in the Patrick Ewing frozen envelope draft, and they have no more equity left. The lottery gods said, "You got your one. You're not getting another one. And in fact, we may punish you for a while." So I actually think you're right. In my head, I remembered the Lakers jumping from like 7 to 4. 11 to 4 is like, holy moly. But I actually think you're right that they find a way to get it done anyway, because it's an extra, it's maybe it's Kuzma, maybe it's an extra pick,
right.
Maybe it's friendlier protections on a couple of the picks, maybe it's something like that. I just don't think there was any other way at that point, because Rich Paul, they had made it adamantly clear he did not want to go to Boston, would not re-sign in Boston. Kyrie was already out the door, about to be out the door in Boston. There was just too much risk for Boston to throw in its best stuff. And I just don't know what the... So I although that was an act of God that favored the Lakers, I still think Anthony Davis is in Los Angeles. And by the way, they gave up everything almost. They gave up everything but Kuzma and, you know, whatever. And I wrote at the time, if you're getting Anthony Davis for 5 or 8 years, you give up everything. If you lose him after a year, it's a disaster. You know, and that doesn't appear to be what's going to happen. It appears that they're going to get Anthony Davis for 5 to 8 to 10 years, and that's, you give up everything for Anthony Davis.
Well, I mean, and then let's go back to where we first started this conversation. They did the same thing for Dwight, okay, in the same spot. Dwight with 1 year left on his deal. He had said he wanted to be in LA. He had said he would, you know, he thought he would re-sign with the franchise. They had a whole year to basically convince him this is where you should play out the rest of your career. And it failed miserably. You know, one thing I don't think has been written well about Dwight's first time through LA was he had a back surgery that he rushed back from. And he felt this obligation to make good on the trade, you know, to do well in his first year with the Lakers. But I don't think he was ever the same player as he was in Orlando. I think his back was killing him. Last year when it was reported that he had like a butt muscle injury. You remember that report?
Yes.
He ends up having back surgery. And I only know this because I have a sciatica stuff myself where I said, did he have a butt muscle injury? How did he have back surgery for that? And they go, oh no, this was just a redo of the back surgery he had all those years ago because it wasn't done correctly or it didn't work out right. I mean, you know, he rushed back from that injury. It didn't work right. Some of the reason why Dwight fell, that trade fell apart or it blew up in their faces where they give up all their assets for Dwight and he leaves for nothing as a free agent, he just wasn't right physically.
I also think that trade was a total no-brainer for them. And they didn't give up anything for Dwight compared to what they gave up for Davis.
Yeah, Andrew Bynum would have broken down with them instead of the Sixers. Okay.
Before I let you go and bring on our special guest for today, not that you're not special, Ramona, but you've come on the Low Post podcast before. This is a debut guest. Tell the story, please, and I don't know it, about Jim Buss and Pat Riley.
Okay, so this is a fun one. I can't even remember how I first heard this story, and it sounded like something that, you know, you tell 10 years later that you know, maybe in retrospect after Jim Buss is gone, you know, this story comes out. But I think a lot of people in Miami may have heard this story as well. But when Phil Jackson retires for the second time, because he ends up retiring for the third time later, after the 2004 season, the Lakers have a coaching vacancy. And Jerry Buss, Jim Buss, reach out to Mickey Arison for permission to speak to Pat Riley about the coaching vacancy. And Mickey Arison grants them the permission. And they start, they have like a, I think it was like a lunch or a dinner in Malibu. That would make sense based on where Pat lives in the off season. And they sort of, they didn't really talk all that much about the coaching vacancy. But in the course of this meeting, they mentioned that they're thinking of trading Shaquille O'Neal. And, you know, like, what would you do? How do you think we should build the team, you know, around Kobe and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Pat, you know, finishes the meeting and was like kind of intrigued and, but like kind of came away walking away from it. And I think if you scour the internet, he's maybe talked about it one time. But the version of the story I've heard is he walked away from the meeting going, well, I don't really want to coach the team. If you're going to trade Shaq, I might as well just trade for Shaq myself. Now, was that meeting set up for the Lakers to lay the groundwork for the Shaq trade? I don't know. Sounds like
it. I love
it.
There's so many stories with this.
Sounds like it.
I know, right? Everybody wanted Lakers Celtics for the history and Boston 17 titles versus Lakers 16 titles. But this is going to be awesome. All right, Ramona, your content is first rate as always. I love having you on.
Thank you. I'm excited for your next guest.
I'll see you at the finals, but I won't see you at the finals. I'll see you virtually at some point during the finals.
It's okay. We'll see each other. Yeah.
Give that little guy a hug, okay? Be well, Ramona.
Thanks, Zach.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning, wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low impact class, they've got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey, learn the basics, and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's there up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them. You name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, enough with Ramona Shelburne. I am very excited to welcome for the first time onto the Low Post podcast a very talented person and I think emerging almost as like the celebrity spokesman for Laker fans of his generation, the one and only O'Shea Jackson Jr. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm in the NBA Finals. I could be a little bit better if I get four more wins.
So I just want to share with you first my introduction to you because I'm so dumb and out of touch. I'm a 43-year-old dad. Like, you can't hope for anything better. I was on a plane coming back from LA for NBA stuff. I finished all my work, had a couple hours. So, you know what? Beer and movie. Let's go. I got a window. Yeah. Straight out of Compton. And I'm watching Straight Out of Compton. And I'm like, where did they find this dude who looks exactly like Ice Cube and has the voice and the mannerisms, like, this is unbelievable. And then the movie ends and I'm Googling, I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So you were awesome in that movie. And I was a big, you know what I liked about that movie before we talked about the Lakers? I liked it for all the glitz and glamour and drama that, you know, it leaned into that stuff a little bit. But I thought, I came away from that movie thinking, like, that was a movie about hard work. Like, that was a movie about guys who gave up everything in their lives, who spent nights and weekends and everything trying to get their craft exactly right. And I was so glad that the movie leaned into that part of it, because no matter the industry, if you want to really achieve what you think you can achieve, like, it's nothing but work. And that movie was like, it showed, like, it's a grind, man. I thought that was my favorite thing about the movie.
Yeah, and that's why that's why they weren't so happy when they found out that they were getting money still stolen from them, you know, because of how much they put in, all the things that they had to deal with. They just wanted to make some songs that people around the neighborhood would play. So, like, you know, they would be the man at parties, like that type thing. And then it just blew up. It blew up into a phenomenon. And yeah, the rest is history. And it's without that movie, man. And I was so scared. Like, I was so scared to take that movie. There's not a lot of great rap biopics. So it was like, I don't know. And I was like my second year of college. So I was a kid. I'm like, my mindset wasn't on going to do this movie for Universal Pictures, you know, and it being about my dad. I spent a lot of time trying to make a name for myself. And so when you have the same name, look just like him, and then the first thing they see you is playing him, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to, like, make your own lane. But, you know, thank God for that movie. After that, I just tried to take roles to show versatility. And, force myself onto sports shows.
Well, no, this is not for – so Ramona put us all on a text chain, and I'm happy to report – it's an amazing text chain, and it illuminates to me, you are living and dying with these games. This isn't just fun for you. This is in your blood. And obviously we can talk about this season for the Lakers and what it's been like, but I want you to tell me what's your, now we're at the highest stakes games. So do you watch by yourself? What's your routine? Do you have a crew that you watch with? What's your setup? Cause you are living and dying with these games.
Yeah, I game one versus the Blazers. I walk into the bedroom where my girlfriend's laying on the bed, and I say, "Babe, this is a side of me you've never seen before. It's gonna get weird. I'm gonna be real angry or really happy. Like, just all right. I haven't been here in like 8 years. You're gonna see a different side of me." And she didn't get it, man. And we lost game one, so she got it after that. And, you know, yeah, I'm a weird fan, dude. Like, these playoffs, if we lose in whatever I'm wearing, I'm never wearing that again. When we win, I'm wearing the same thing. This whole Denver series, I've been wearing my Mamba jersey, the black and gold. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Don't take it off. I have to have that back on. We've won ever since, you know. So it has been stressful. Like, it is, and I've won every series 4-1, but still, it is so stressful because it's so much pressure on this year. Like, this year, because we lost Kobe. Like, because we lost Kobe, it has to happen this year. Like, it's so. It's like a storybook, you know, and we have to do it. And everybody in the league knows that's what's driving us. LeBron with the 24 on his finger wrap. Like, it's so important for us to get this done for our guy. And it is no next year reloading and all that. It has to be this year. And everyone knows it.
So it's interesting. I tweeted after they won the game five in advance of the finals. I said something like, think about the calendar year that the Lakers have had. And here they are, 12-3 in the playoffs and the finals, beyond impressive. And I got a lot, I mean, this happens on social media because people are mean and nasty and dumb. Yeah. I got a lot of, oh, everyone had a tough year. It's a pandemic for everybody. You know, enough with the Lakers. And I'm like, this is why I said, think for a second about the calendar year that the Lakers have had. Because it's not just Kobe, although that obviously is something unfathomable to live through. It's a year ago, the China stuff was happening to them in China that they had to live through that. Then Kobe, just an unfathomable loss for that organization and for the players, for Jeannie Buss, for Rob Pelinka, who is one of Kobe's best friends. So this is a year, and then you throw a pandemic on top of it where you're rolling. You just beat the Clippers and the Bucks. You're setting yourself up for the number one seed. You're rolling. The whole league stops for 4 months. No one knows what's going to happen. So, yeah, I do think the Lakers have had a year like no other sports team in the history of professional sports. And to your point, I think the team won't speak about it so much like this, but they have to feel a sense of mission of we've got to do it.
Yeah, and it's just from Coach Vogel ending every huddle with Mamba on three, that alone, that right there shows what type of mental state everyone is in. And though, as a Laker fan, I see like every mistake and like I can't help but just like completely fill my mind with every turnover, every brick, and you win 4-1. Like, what are you complaining about? But it's just so much pressure. It's so much pressure. It drives me crazy. I've been, for 8 years, I've just been enjoying the playoffs, like a fan, not really cheering for anybody. But to be back in it is the best type of headache. And for it to be such a ridiculous time and to lose Kobe in January, we get to the finals exactly 8 months after we lose him. It's just so many numbers, so many hints, so many special moments that this season brings. And, Laker haters, I love them. Some people kill for that type of loyalty. They hate me every day. And that is my best part about being a Laker. So, yeah, they're tired of hearing about us. And then you add LeBron. Now you got to hear about me even more. It's like probably one of the funnest seasons that I've had in a long time.
So one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on was you came of age as a sports fan. We all I always think of 12 to 16 are the years where you really you begin to realize what it feels like to be a fan, what the loyalty means. For you, that's the apex of Shaq Kobe. You come of age as a sports fan during Shaq Kobe. So my first question, though, is you experienced that growing up. And you just think, man, I'm a Lakers fan. I got Shaq and Kobe. This is what life is like. So what have the last 6 years been like for you? Because this is completely unprecedented territory for the Lakers. They do not miss the playoffs 6 years in a row. They never have. They've never had a fallow period like this. So how have you – it sounds like you're still watching games. You're still a diehard. But did you ever lose hope? Did you ever feel like, man, maybe the Lakers brand isn't what it used to be?
Oh, no. And this is my logic. People are probably going to call me crazy, but this is my logic on it. First, I came in the forum. I'm a forum Laker fan. I was seeing Eldon Campbell, Eddie Jones, Nick the Quick, Nick Van Exel. And, those are the times that I remember going to the game with my parents. And my dad is so loud, and he yells at referees, calls them out by their number. That's just what I remember. And I remember losing to the Spurs. We were in the playoffs, lost to the Spurs. And I see people kicking trash cans. I see people it's just chaos in there. People are upset. And I looked at my dad and I said, I'm a little kid. I'm like, Dad, are you still a Laker fan? And he looked at me and he said, you'll always be a Laker fan. And then after that, I was just like, all right, no matter what, I got to stay with this team. And then when we got to Staples, and we had Phil, and we're just running through the league. I'm so spoiled, the fact that I had Kobe. I wish I could go back to fully appreciate. Because, you're a little kid. I don't even have to watch the game. We won. I'll tell you right now, we won. We got it. And it was just What a time to be alive, dude. And like, you just look at other teams like you have no idea what it's like to win. You know, like they just don't even belong in the same arena as us. And that drought, when Shaq left, that broke my heart. But, you know, you got to keep Kobe. In that situation, as much as I love the Diesel, we had to keep Kobe. Like, Kobe was the young dude. If you're down by 30, Shaq's not going to bring you back when you're down by 30. Like, you know, you can get as many – you can try to get as many and ones as you want. But Kobe, just the way he defended on the perimeter – and he's just a lightning rod, you know. He's going to get you into the game. You're still in the game if he's on the floor. And when the Chris Paul thing happened, I remember Mitch Kupchak said this set us back 5 years, and I definitely didn't want to believe that. And he was absolutely right. It ruined us. You know, I was cheering for Earl Clark. I was cheering for Andrew Goutlock. Like, put Andrew Goutlock in the game. Ryan Kelly. I'm in the lottery. Like, I don't know what this life
Ryan,
is. I don't know
Ryan
what
Kelly
doing.
Is a deep cut. Ryan Kelly, sharpshooter, Ryan big man. Ryan Kelly is a deep cut.
Yeah, but, like, you know, I cherish those times now because I know how hard it was, but you got to keep your loyalty. It's so winning is so worth it, and it tastes so sweeter when you've been through those hard times. And, you know, I know people, Memphis Grizzly fans, and, you know, Washington Wizards fans are like, oh, yeah, those are tough times. You're right back in it. But, yeah, man, it's hard. Like, Xavier Henry, you know, like, Devin Ebanks, Derek Character, like, those guys.
This is great. This is fantastic.
I rode with those guys, you know, and I'm so happy that we're here. I look at it like from 1988, we didn't win a championship till 2000. It's 12 years. I didn't get to 12 years, so I can't complain. You know, like 10, that's fun, but like
so,
I'm so thankful.
So Shaq goes to Miami, wins a title. Raps in a club about Kobe in somewhat profane terms, trailing him in the championship race, let's say. And then Kobe has this, then you have the sort of what have now come to be known as like the Flip Murray years, where Kobe scores a million points and the Lakers are kind of mediocre. So Shaq wins, raps about Kobe in disparaging terms. The Lakers flail about a little bit before the Powell trade. In that time, Are you stressed? Are you like, man, that Shaq thing was a mistake. Like, this isn't really working out. What do you remember about that?
I remember, you know, that first game against Miami. I think it was on Christmas.
I was gonna say it's a Christmas game. Didn't Kobe try to dunk on Shaq at one point?
Yeah. And me and my family were on vacation, and I remember watching that. And that was the first time where I was mad at Shaq. Like, I really was like, dude, you broke my heart. I loved you. I loved Kazam, Steele. I was there. I was with you, man. And you, like, that was the first time Shaq was like the enemy to me. And, you know, I didn't like that feeling. And, like, Shaq is a Laker. Shaq is a Laker.
He's he's a perfect Laker.
Yeah, like, dude, yeah, right. Big money, just the star. He's a star. But man, when he left, it was a weird feeling, man, because I felt like they would be together forever. I felt like it's Shaq and Kobe. Like, there's no way that they're broken up, going at each other like this. And yeah, that was not a good time. I remember that was when I started riding for Kobe, just tough. Anybody who had anything to say about Kobe, I'm on your head. Like, there's nothing you can say about my guy. And yeah, I was so happy to get that revenge. That against the Magic too, like Shaq's original team. Like, it meant a little bit more. And then for Kobe to get that five, that fifth ring, that's winning the rivalry. And Shaq played for the Celtics. Whoa! Disrespectful.
Did you want the Celtics in this series? Because if the Lakers win, you wanted them.
I wanted him, man. It would, first of all, how great would it be for LeBron coming in and your first ring on the Lakers is against the Celtics? And then you got that plus the Rajon Rondo aspect, like Rondo against the Celtics with the Lakers in the final. It just would have been great. But, you know, just like they always do, Celtics find a way to disappoint me.
Ooh! And
so, you know, we're headed to Miami. You know, we're not headed to Miami, but we got the Heat, and this Heat team is scrappy. And I feel like they are just well-balanced, just hungry. And, you know, they love that underdog aspect, and that's scary. But, yeah, I wanted Boston for the storybook ending, but you know how they do.
It's funny. You mentioned the 2009 finals, and then obviously 2010, the Lakers beat Boston in Game 7 in L.A. I feel like people tend to rush over those championships when they talk about Kobe's career, because there's a sense of like they won them during this void where LeBron wasn't quite LeBron yet, or he was LeBron, but like his team wasn't good enough. He was about to go to the Heat, and Kevin Garnett gets hurt in 2009. There's just this, like, those are rushed over, and I don't think they should be, because A, the Magic were awesome. Then the Celtics get back in 2010. Now Perk gets hurt. People want to whine about that. Guys get hurt all the time. Perk was a fifth starter by a mile. I feel like those two titles, for some reason in the telling of Kobe's career, they kind of get short shrift. And that's partly because the Shaq three-peat gets all the attention. Like, winning one title is hard. I don't care where you are, what team you are. Winning one is hard. You know, how many teams have been trying? Like, James Harden's chasing the finals once, you know, since the Thunder. Like, it's hard to win one. I don't know what your memories are from those series. And, you know, I just feel like they just get sort of short shrift. You know what I mean?
Dude, that's what it's like to be a Laker fan. You never, like, it's just, you see things differently than people want to give you credit for. And Kobe went to the finals three straight years. 08, 09, 2010. You know, again. I did it again. And, you know, who knows what would happen. That Boston team is the most hyped one championship team ever. Ever. I mean, if we're in the NBA Finals, and the other team is missing two of their starters with Ariza and Bynum hurt, yeah, you better win. I'm happy for you. What'd you do after that? So, Kobe,
I'm just going to let you go.
For Kobe not to get credit is the most Kobe thing ever. It's always damned if you do, damned if you don't. And it's, you know, it's fine. I know I hate that Steve Nash got these ridiculous MVPs when Kobe was on fire. You know, for him to have one MVP.
Well, Shaq to me is the one that really deserves more than one MVP.
It's a crime. It's hard to be a Laker, man. That's why that's why he says when you choose the purple and gold, you have to know it's different. You're not going to get – they don't love you. When you wear that purple and gold, they don't love you. So, like, it is a new amount of pressure. I was one of the people who said, yeah, LeBron's doing it over there in the East. Oh, yeah, he's doing it over there in the East, but what would he do out West? He came out West, took a team that wasn't in the playoffs to number one, led the league in assists. 16 votes, it's a crime. It's hard to be a Laker. It's not for everybody.
I love this. I love everything about this. What was it? So when he signs, when LeBron signs with the Lakers, obviously you're getting the best player in the NBA. It's a party. But was there a sense of like, it's going to take time for fans to like, not warm up to him, but you know, he's kind of replacing Kobe as the face of the franchise. And he's never going to be an icon in Los Angeles the way Kobe is. So that first year, was it strange a little bit to like you turn on the game like, oh yeah, LeBron's on our team. That's kind of weird. Or was it immediately like, he's one of us, let's go?
Yep. I mean, that's it. So I remember I was at my parents' house and I'm on my phone, I'm on Twitter, and I look at my dad and I said, we got him. He said, who? We got LeBron James. He looked the look he had on his face was like, nah, nah. he goes on Twitter, blah, blah, blah. You know, the rest is history. But as soon as I got LeBron James, you would have thought I followed him since high school. Like, it's LeBron James. As a sports fan, you have people that you just, you know, you love bashing, but you gotta respect the man. I remember when he was going against Golden State and he had like 51 in game one, right then and there, I was like, yo, this dude is one of the best ever. I gotta give it up.
I've said before, so that was game one of the 2018 finals when they had no chance to win. They were not going to win that series. I've said before, that game or game six, Miami-Boston in 2012, when Boston is up 3-2 and Miami's on the verge of crapping out for the second year in a row and LeBron scores 45, those are the two greatest games he's ever played. That 51-point game, because they lost insane. And because they got – it was insane.
Like, just unreal. And after that, I was just like, yo – you know, I'll root against you if you're going against the Lakers, but I'm a fan. And, you know, there's Laker fans who love Kobe and feel that if you cheer for LeBron, it somehow hurts Kobe. Doesn't make sense. He's a Laker. If Darth Vader calls you and tells you that he wants to be on the squad, you kind of let Darth Vader just join. You know, it's like the big bad wolf is on your side. And when it's purple and gold, he's going to get us these W's. It has nothing – like, the love for Kobe is no way affected by loving LeBron. And at the end of the day, it's loving the Lakers. It's all Lakers to me. And it's something that a number of people in the city have to find a way to get over. You know, you constantly hear, well, he hasn't done anything yet. He hasn't done – give the man some time. I knew that the young core, you know, Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart and Lonzo, I knew it was bad for them when LeBron didn't have a secret handshake with none of them. when I saw him just out there shaking hands, I was like, uh-oh. You know, now you look at him, every single player got some quick thing they do with LeBron. You know, it's just – You got to give that man time. His basketball IQ is ridiculous, and he's going to get you these dubs. Now we're back home. We're in the finals. What do you have to say now? All credit to LeBron. You know, it's standard Lakers. Standard Lakers to get the best in the league, right? It's just how things are supposed to go.
Before we let you go, this is totally open-ended. It could be basketball. It could be a game. It could be non-basketball. What are your favorite Kobe memories as a fan or as a person? For me, I mean, you could say the lob game against Portland. You could say something off the floor. Just what do you think about most?
Man, yeah, you know, I've been to Kobe's last game. That 60 points, that was incredible.
You were there?
Yeah, I was there. I was there at game seven against the Celtics. I was there, and you know, like, of course, those sports moments are. You know, that's what you first think of. But a personal moment for me, before he passed, he had, you know, I finally just, like, hit him on Twitter. I was like, yo, can you give me some career advice? And he called me and had a 25-minute conversation with me. And it was the first and last time I got to talk to my hero. I guess that would be up there, but the moment I want to say is I did Straight out of Compton. I got a big, you know, a bit of a name for myself, and my agent had got me courtside seats. It was Lakers versus Thunder when KD was still there, and I'm letting KD and Russ have it. I'm just courtside, just dogging them out, and, you know, Kobe laughed, and I'm like, man, Kobe laughed. Like, it's a big deal, and Ramona was there. I'm talking to Ramona during halftime. And my back is to the court, and I'm talking to Ramona, and I feel a hand on my shoulder. And I turn around, and it's Kobe. And all he said was, you finally made it down here. And in my mind, I'm thinking, like, yup, I finally made it down here. And I, you know, we high five, you know, the dap up for the hug. And when we hugged, I closed my eyes because it's like, it's my hero. It's like, man, And Ramona leans over. She's like, you know, I saw that, right? Like, that's my favorite. That's my favorite Kobe moment, you know, because it was a big deal for me to be down there making a name for myself. You know, it's in an, and to hear your hero tell you, you finally made it, like that. That's a moment that I'll have forever.
That's great. Well, buckle up, because the Heat are no pushovers, and they are hungry, and they play hard on both ends of the floor. And I don't know if you saw the game last night, but when Bam Adebayo faced up Daniel Tice and ended his life with a dunk right in his face and growled, that was a statement. That was, we are coming, and we are not afraid of anybody. So you got some between 4 and 7 stressful games coming up where you live. So buckle up.
Let me tell you, man, I don't give a damn. It's Lakers all day, purple and gold. My blood is purple. My bones are gold. We're doing this for Kobe. There's nothing that can stand in our way. We're motivated, and we're going to get it done. This team is something special. This Heat team aren't pushovers, don't get me wrong, but I'm not going to bet against my Lakers anytime.
I love it. O'Shea Jackson Jr., this was a lot of fun. Let's do it again sometime. Enjoy the next couple of weeks, because it has, by Lakers standards, it's been a while. So enjoy it, and thanks for popping on.
One more thing?
Yeah, of course.
Go Lakers.
Well, but you, look, you said it. All right. Thank you, sir. Be well.
Thank you, man.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.